We get into the question of Minin Melech. Well, the Minin Melech is an obligation. The Minin Melech is only an option. It's not a chiyuv. And this machlokes is very significant. And I mentioned to you that there's also a big machlokes in Rishonim how to paskin. The machlokes Rav Noroi here and Rav Yehuda. So it's clear most Rishonim paskin like the position of the Rambam and the Smag and the Chinuch and the Meiri and the Ran. I would say Kemad Rova Rishonim take that position that there's an obligation to appoint a Melech. I believe I mentioned Lashon Rambam. The Rambam counts this mitzvah as one of the Minyan mitzvahs. It begins off Melochim. Shalosh mitzvahs is Tzavi Yisrael B'Shach Yisrael B'Aretz. I'm sorry. Did something happen? Anyway, there are three mitzvahs that Klal Yisrael were commanded to when they entered Eretz Yisrael. One is Minyan Melech. And the way I understand the Rambam, it's not just Minyan Melech, but it's establishing a sovereign government. And there's no question in my mind, there's an issue that Rakuch Zatzal dealt with. And others also deal with this issue, whether the present government of the state of Israel is that assumed under this mitzvah of Minyan Melech. Rakuch felt yes, very strongly, and others disagree with him. But one thing is clear, that there is an obligation to set up a sovereign government in Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam says this very clearly, and then the Rambam, I'm not going to read the entire Rambam, but the Rambam clearly holds like a Yehuda Shita, and the Yehuda says here in the Gemara, so he counts these three mitzvahs, Melech. Second is the obligation to destroy Amalek. Third is the obligation to build a Beis HaPchir, Beis HaMikdash. And as I said, not only the Rambam, but many other Rishonim agree with that position. It is true that the Rishonim have a problem, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, with the pasuk. Biyamarta asima alai melech kol agoyim asher sivavchi. What do we mean by that pasuk? We discussed it, if you recall. And there are different ways of resolving the stira. The Ramban resolves the stira by saying the following. The stira, you understand? That the pasuk indicates here in Pashas Shoftim, the Pashas HaMelech, it says when you come to Eretz Yisrael, biyamarta, you will say. So that doesn't sound like there's an obligation. It sounds like something which is an option, that you request a king, and the Rambam understood that to mean the mitzvah say. So how do you reconcile that with the beginning of the pasuk? It's true, the Torah says subsequently, som tasim alach amelach. It sounds like it's an obligation. But the problem is, how do you reconcile som tasim with the beginning of the pasuk? Which apparently is understood as an obligation, that the Torah is being mechayim to do this. By the way, you have similar kind of structure Kisibne Bayis Chodesh. I'm just trying to think of an example. Kisibne Bayis Chodesh and Kisaisi, what does the Zohar say? V'yasisa maka l'gagecha. What does that sound like to you? Kisibne Bayis Chodesh. When you build a new house, you're supposed to build a parapet.
It's the same way of contradicting. It's first saying
exactly the same issue. It's exactly my point. It's the same stira. So how do you reconcile that stira? That Chazal also interpreted v'yasisa maka is an obligation. So he too, biyamarta, asima alai melech, you will say, I want to appoint a king. And then the Torah says, you're obligated to appoint a king. So the Ramban, I think, is bothered by this kasha, and so are the other Rishonim. And I'll read you the language of the Ramban. The Ramban seems to say, biyamarta is not a tznai of the mitzvah. It's the beginning of the mitzvah. Because the Ramban understands that the mitzvah consists of two segments. Segment number one is that the population, the populace, has to request. There's an obligation for them to request a king. From whom do they request? The pasuk says over here, they're coming before Hakohanim, Halevim, and Hashofet, Hashayiyah, Vayam, Mahem. So they request a king. And now the obligation is to respond to that request and to appoint a king. That's how the Ramban understands himself. Because he's trying to resolve the contradiction. There's a contradiction in the pasuk. He's trying to resolve it. And clearly the Ramban holds like the position of Yehuda, that there's clearly an obligation to go ahead and appoint a king, and that's Lashon. I read this, if I'm not mistaken, last week. He writes the Ramban further, and this is another problem in the pasuk. The pasuk besides saying the amarta, the Torah then says, "Som tasim alach melech, asher yibchar Hashem elokecha b'ol." But there's a problem that the people, when they ask for a king, what do they say? Kichol Hagoyim Asher Sivosa. Remember, we spoke about that. And Kichol Hagoyim seems to be part of the other position of Rav Noroi. Rav Noroi was clearly upset. He writes that this is a gnai in Israel. Lo Nema Pashasu, the Gemara says, look at Negatam Mosa. Because they complained, and they said, Kichol Hagoyim, that's not a positive thing, it's a pejorative statement. And then the Sifrei, I read to you last week as well, the Sifrei writes, Rav Noroi Omer, Harei Dover said, Gnai Yisrael. It's a terrible blight on the Jewish people. Shenema, Ki Lo Hoschah Masu, Ki Yasi Masu, Nimloch Aleihem. You rejected Hashem, and you prefer an earthly mortal king. So, again, that pasuk also is a problem. How do you deal with that pasuk? How do you deal with the, how does Ramban deal with, Kichol Agoyim Asher Sivosa? Ramban tries to answer that too. I'll read you his lashon. He's bothered by all these questions. So the Ramban answers, he says, Ufidati, Shegamze, this is also a remnant for the future. Because when they said, Kichol Agoyim Asher Sivosa, Shekeinoya, Kshesha Lulahem, Esho, Amru the Shmuel, when they went and told Shmuel they wanted a king, and he gave them Shalom Melech, what did they say? Sima Lo Melech L'Shatei Kichol Hagoyim. That was part of their argument. That appoint for us a king who will judge us Kichol Hagoyim. And then the pasuk says, also Vayinu Gam Anachnu Kichol Hagoyim U'Shvatanu Malkeinu. So the Ramban says, Ki Matam, why should the Torah say, in this mitzvah, Kichol Hagoyim Asher Sivosai, then Yisrael Guyim Milma Mehem Milma the Kari Bosi Abla. If it's something that's an Abla, if it's something which is a negative, so why should we be envious of other nations? Why should we want to ape or simulate this kind of phenomena if it's not of a positive nature? Abel Zeh Remes. So the Ramban says, what the Torah means, what it says, it's a remes of what's going to happen. Because Rabban basically is saying that number one, V'amarta is a chelek of the mitzvah. Means the mitzvah doesn't begin, the obligation to appoint the king doesn't begin till when? Till you request it. The request is considered to be apparently very significant. It's part of the mitzvah of appointing a king. And then beyond that, the Rabban learns, Kichol Hagoyim Asher Sivosai is a remez, is a prophetic remez to what's going to be in the future. I'm skipping part of the Ramban, but the Ramban then, here he says at the end, that we see this notion elsewhere. Okay, I'm not going to read the whole Ramban, a very, very long Ramban over here, he goes on and on. And okay, that's what we mentioned last week regarding the position of the Ramban. I also pointed out, I'm sorry?
Isn't that antithetical to what we just said before about the Sugim and Shoftim are basically saying that the request itself, that's the Aveira. It's directly contradicting.
This Ramban is very difficult. I mean, but you see, he's troubled. The Ramban came to the Maskana like the Ramban is a mitzvah. Now he has to deal with the Sugim. So he tries with great difficulty to wiggle his way out of it, and that's how he does. He wiggles his way by saying, Kichol Hagoyim is simply a remez of the Vua nature, what's going to be. But your time is a correct time. A very legitimate time. It's a very difficult Ramban. Even the first part is difficult. We are mad at both. I think both is halakim are not simple, according to the Ramban. But that's what the Ramban says, and I mentioned last week also, and I also xeroxed here, the entire Archaim HaKadosh. I'm not going to read the whole Archaim HaKadosh. However, I did mention that the Ababanel, and I then this week really went looking and looking, and I think he's, by the way, the most qualified to discuss this issue. I explained to you why last week, if you remember, because the Ababanel himself, who was born in 1437, if I'm not mistaken, the Ababanel himself was the Minister of Treasury of Portugal, and he also received a dual education. He actually was very heavily steeped, not just in Jewish sources, but also he received a second education, a very profound one. He knew actually Greek and Roman literature, philosophy. He also had fluency in languages and what have you. I read the biography of Ababanel just based on that, not based on my extensive knowledge of Ababanel, which is not extensive at all. And I did learn here and there Ababanel, because my father was a very big chassid. Ababanel. So when we were younger, so my father used to read Ababanel to us for bedtime reading. He used to read Shakespeare, Lahavdil, Ababanel. They all were very good to me. They certainly did the job better than soporific. Anyway, but when his father died, so then he became the Minister of Treasury of Portugal, and then after a short period of time, What happened was that he was compelled to flee Portugal, then he went to Spain, became the Ministry of the Treasury of Spain, and then later on, in 1492, Jews were expelled from Spain, he also was expelled at the same time, and he lived at that point in, if I'm not mistaken, he lived where?
In Venice,
correct. I think at the end of his days, he lived in Venice. That was a republic at that time. He became actually also a very well-known Yoetz Kalkali. So he became someone who was an advisor on economic affairs.
Court
chief. I don't know if I told him that, but he was heavily involved in economic issues and the like. And there's no question, you know, as I told you last week, a few weeks ago, it's amazing the fecundity of this fella. In terms of, he wrote more than anyone else that I know in Tanakh. I don't think anyone was as productive as the Abravanel. I think he has, if I'm not mistaken, I was told it by people who know better than I do, that his productivity in Tanakh is more than any other Mefarish put together, any single Mefarish for sure. And he wrote other Svarim besides the Perush on Tanakh, which is voluminous in and of itself. He wrote many, many other Svarim. He has very, very fascinating Svarim. Anyway, the reason I mention this is because he really knew the highways and byways of, shall we say, what monarchy was all about. And he found it was the most familiar. He was a Ben Bias, but Eban Amalachim. He literally lived in the House of Kings, and he certainly understood their entire, all the politics and the intrigue and the pluses and minuses, etc., etc. Okay, the reason why I mention all this is because, again, he asked the question, which really know what you were asking to a large extent, and I'll read you his Lashon. He says, "In Haisa Shelas HaMelech Mitzaseh, if this is a positive commitment, how could Shmuel become so angry? Shmuel was furious. Okay, Hashem calmed him down. Hashem told him, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. But it's clear Shmuel's initial reaction was one of fury.
And Hashem tells him to warn him also. I just like,
to what? I'm sorry? To
Hashem specifically told Shmuel to warn Bnei Israel also.
Correct, that's the Mishpat HaMelech. That's what the Gemara described in Sanhedrin and Nafkaf. And he indicates to him exactly, forewarned is forearmed. You think that the idea of Malchus is something which is of a very positive nature. Let's tell you a little bit about the downside of Malchus, of which there's no shortage of that for sure. But that's what he writes over here. He says, how did Shmuel become so furious? And he writes further, he brings four different opinions over here. How Chazal try to be miyashi this question. Right. And he indicates himself, let me just read you one or two more things if you don't mind. And he says that if this was such a positive thing, as many of the Rishonim seem to indicate, Lama in came, Yoshua Ushar Shofti Yisrael Shabo Achara. So what happened immediately upon the after this initial period of time, what about Yoshua and all the other Shoftim? Lo Yisrael L'Hamlech Melech Yisrael. Because if there's a mitzvah, so right away, at the very outset, they should have done what? They should have appointed Malachim. Why Yeshua and the other Shoftim, why was there no concept of Melech? I told you last time, the Malbim writes that the Shoftim also had a kind of Din Melech, let's say, B'tzurah Chalki, from a partial perspective. Not a total Din Melech, but a partial Din Melech. But he asks, so why did they appoint the Melech Yisrael? They are Kulam al Zosa Mitzvah, B'yosem Baretz, Achrei Akim U'Shvah Chiluk. How could they violate this mitzvah? Even according to the most Rishonim. We're talking about a mitzvah, how do they violate the mitzvah? These are very legitimate questions. No? But the Abba then he goes further. I want to read this lashon because I xerox a lot of it. He says, "Kvar hora hanisayim b'inyan malchus Yisrael malchus Yehuda shema ayu b'mordi or hema hisevu l'Abba ben Yisrael acharadis." They were the ones who were responsible for Klal Yisrael. Number one, receding backward. Moshe Yadanu b'yom menavat u'sham malchus Yisrael kulam b'ruba b'malchus Yehuda. The reason why we went into Golus because of these kings. They led us literally down the primrose path. They didn't lead us properly. He goes on and on and on. It's unbelievable. And then he says the following. He quotes a number of philosophers who are apparently in favor of the concept of Malchus. He argues with them over here. And he says that anyone who has any concept of what Malchus and Melachim are all about should realize that unfortunately much of it is quite negative. And then he gives examples from Rome. Let the examples, he goes through the history of Rome. Have you ever read Gibbon, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire? Mind-boggling. The debauchery and the corruption and the decadence. I mean, nothing has changed. It's really amazing how history just repeats itself again and again. Let me just finish one thing. He goes on to describe here also even the Italian countries that he's familiar with, and he basically feels, he takes the position that he's in a republic. Apparently Venice was a republic at that point in time, and he indicates clearly that all these monarchies essentially failed. They were dismal in their inability to lead the people, and then he then subsequently after he says all this, and now he comes to explain the parsha according to his understanding of things. So, okay, go first, yeah, and then I will read part of this.
If there wasn't supposed to be a kingship, how come it's planned out so many years before during when Yaakov was given the bracha, Yehuda?
Mi lo yosef shevim Yehuda mechokim ben ragla. Mi Yaakov sort of paved the way, you say. At the very outset, when he gave the bracha to the Shvatim, already built in there is the notion of Malchus. The problem is, at what point it began? It began much later. I mean, Abraham himself is really asking that question. He's asking, well, you're asking from Yaakov Avinu. But he's asking from the Pasuk in Chumash. The Pasuk in Chumash said, if you assume, like most Rishonim, that it's a mitzvah, so why was this mitzvah not, shall we say, implemented? From the very beginning, when we entered Eretz Yisrael, we should have implemented this mitzvah. Why was it not implemented? I think there are answers. We remember you alluded to something last week, I don't know if you recall, or the week before. There are answers to this question, why it was not implemented at that point in time. Let's say the days of the Shoftim or Yeshua Ben Nun's days. Yeah.
Is it Chiyah or is it Rishos?
Well, that's exactly the Machlokas among the Rishonim. But most Rishonim hold, it's a Chiyah. That's
why
what I'm saying.
If it's Chiyah, why wait?
Okay, that's his question. That's exactly what he's asking on the Rambam, and on the Ramban, and on the Smag, and on the Ran. And most Rishonim hold, it's a Chiyah, why wait? It's an obligation, you know. It's I don't know. This question, as you know, is someone was talking to me about this. Pru Avu is a mitzvah. La'avdil. I'm not comparing these two mitzvahs, but Pru Avu is a mitzvah that devolves upon whom a man is obligated to Pru Avu. A woman is part of Pru Avu, even though they're the ones who have the children, but they're part of the mitzvah. The more advice from the Rambam from a pasuk, because it says Milu Etzaras Kipshua. A man is also be Yeshua Shalom the Kibush, a woman is not also be Kibush. Whatever that means, let's not get into it right now, but that's what the Gemara says. But now the question is, okay, so why did we have, shall we say, at the age of Bar Mitzvah, 13 in a day, everyone should get married? Is the mitzvah provable? Why should we delay the mitzvah?
In general,
what's that?
The Gemara condition that says you should get married
as early as you can, but no one seems to be getting married at the age of 13 in a day, as far as I know. It would be catastrophic in most cases. So, I assume, what is the reason why we're not making a mitzvah at 13 in a day? You fill, you put on 13 in a day. And other mitzvahs who have a kind of 13 in a day when the person becomes about mitzvah. What about the mitzvah approval? Why don't we kind of mitzvah at 13 in a day?
Certain mitzvahs you need to wait for it. You need to mature.
Okay, sure, exactly. So that's what many of the Achronim answer this question.
Is this the reason why we're going to ask this?
You're right. At
this point, they didn't have a full kibush of Eretz Yisrael. They still had the
push. No, but let's say after 14 years, kibush was still the Eretz Yisrael. You're right. So that's the essence where he tells Yeshua ben Nun. You are correct. As he said, you look at the drunk in Yeshua, one of the biggest tainus in Yeshua ben Nun was that the Shvatim took their time in conquering Eretz Yisrael.
The subsequent 200 years afterwards,
they weren't ready.
You hear that, however? What? Yeah. 200 years?
They weren't ready. They were like.
What does that mean?
But they were spiritual. During the times of the Shoftim, they still constantly had Rav. They kept going into
Avodah Zarah,
and then they were
they don't revise some other maybe the problems with Avodah.
Like they were. But that's exactly about those points. And why did they appoint the king to resolve these issues? To give them leadership, give them direction, to orchestrate that which has to be organized and put together, and now it's all the problem.
Why doesn't the Torah?
That's not his issue.
Maybe they weren't unified as a nation, and they were.
Okay, so there are answers, that's what you're suggesting.
It's
there's
Torah,
we have a lack of unity to that point in time.
I don't know why we're dealing with this question. I think the question of why Hashem's reprimanding the Jews for asking is a much stronger claim against the Ramban and all these other proportions. Here's a clear case of where, especially Ramban, he says that it's...
That's a very strong kasha, Abamanelis. What do you say to this kasha? Which is always saying there's a stronger kasha. I think he's right, by the way.
Can you say it's more Shmuel's personal opinion?
How do you respond to that? What?
Can you say it's more Shmuel's personal opinion? Because
his own personal opinion?
No, because Hashem calms him down in a way.
Well, I don't know if Hashem, you look at the Tanakh, take a look at the Psalm.
But can't you just say that? Really, they had the wrong intentions. That's very simple. They wanted it for other reasons, to be like all the nations. To be like all the nations.
The Torah says like the nations around you. So why is it bad that they ask for...
The way that Abba is that the Torah is just
alluding to
prophesying what's going to happen. It's a Rebbe, it's not a Lefani Prophet, or Shmuel. It says over here... Karakas it should be. Yeah, still there, not much. Karakas of the Shmuel Aleph. Let's read the Psukim here. After the Vayiki Kasher Zaki and Shmuel, by the way, that's also a very significant introduction to this parak. He became older. Vayasev es banav shaltim nisunah. In general, you know, this is an issue unto itself. Children replacing their parents in leadership positions. I don't know if you know what's happening in the world of yeshivas. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Anyone is aware of what's happening in the world of yeshivas?
Nepotism.
Why? I mean, the nepotism is mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. Father gives over to son, or to son-in-law, and often even if they're not necessarily worthy of becoming Rosh Yeshiva and the like. Someone told me the name of Rapam Zatzal, who was a big Rosh Yeshiva Tarvadas. He was a big tzaddik. He was also a big gadol. So none of his children are in Tarvadas. Why not? And he has children who are very capable, all three of them. Three brothers, each one is either a Magid Shir or a Ram, whatever it may be, in different cities, not in Tarvadas. And Rapam said, because he did not want Chas V'Shalom to be accused of nepotism. Tarvadas is about the only yeshiva, or maybe YU. Nepotism, I believe, YU, the important Rosh Yeshiva, who are, Baruch Hashem, very capable, very competent, and big time, I hope that's a very good thing, that one should not be accused of nepotism. But many, many yeshivas are run, and the problem is that that's what you have often this beginning of machlokas in yeshivas, because it leads to people feel that he's not worthy of being the Rosh Yeshiva. And often he's not worthy, the son of the son-in-law, whoever it may be. But because he's the son of the son-in-law, so therefore, automatically he's given the position. Anyway, so it says here, Yosef is banav shaltim yisrael. And why does it say that? Because right after that, Ha'ish shen b'na'a b'chor yor, v'shem yishrei aviyo, shaltim v'yashava, v'lo'ofu banav b'drachah. V'yayitu achari ha'bonza, v'yayitu shokah v'yayitu mishpah. Whatever the chatoi work, I can't discuss it right now, this needs separate treatment, but the juxtaposition is very fascinating. Here the Navi describes how they were not exactly how shall we say it, whatever the particulars were, and yet right away, initially, his immediate, almost like, how do you call it, knee-jerk reaction is to appoint his children as shoftim. Okay, that's not what we're interested in. I just now pasuk dalet. Vayiskatzu kol zikri Yisrael, vayibo Shmuel haramasa, vayomer elo v'niyato zakanta, uvanecha la'olchu b'dvachecha. So what do the people think? The people, do they think that his sons are worthy of, shall we say, taking his position? The answer is no. They don't think so. They want a king. Now let's take a look, since you responded to this a moment ago. So do we have any comments so far on the part of Shmuel? No. Let's just finish the psukim. Vayir Adava means he is clearly, shall we say, beside himself. He is upset. But we don't yet have any comment, reaction, verbal reaction on the part of Shmuel to their reaction. And he davens to Hashem. Hashem al Shmuel, Shema b'kol ha'am, l'chol ha'shiyom v'relecha. What should you do? Respond affirmatively. Let me just finish one more. Do psukim. Ki lo oscha ma'asu ki elsi ma'asu b'no ha'leyen. Shmuel has not said a word. Except, v'yer adam. Can he read that? That which he felt, or that which he, shall we say, somehow his initial gut reaction was even perhaps somewhat apparent, it's not so clear in the psukim, but Hashem tells him they are not rejecting you. It's not a personal attack on you, it's an attack on me. Kechol ha'masim Hashem also, then he continues, v'yom ha'alosi osam yimitzvayim v'yom ha'zeh v'yazvuni v'yadulam acherim. I mean, they abandoned me, Hashem said, and they worshipped other gods. They're doing it to you. But listen to what they're telling you. However, tell them, wake up and smell the coffee. Tell them exactly what you mentioned before, what Mishpat HaMelech is all about. What exactly they're in for. Yes, there are some positive things about Melech, for sure, but there are also, shall we say, there's a downside, which they should know what it's all about. You got to tell Mishpat HaMelech, Yeah, Eddie.
It seems like the people that are coming to Shmuel just have a general concern about the future of the nation, because it doesn't seem like there's anyone that's fit to take over. So they're just trying to find someone in order to take over, because Shmuel is dying, and it doesn't seem like there's anyone to replace him. So it seems like a genuine concern.
A legitimate request on their part. They need a leader. They're looking for a leader. But again, the question of Amalek, that's the issue we're right now focusing on. Noah said that question is the stronger question. Namely, Babadel asked, I mean, he has several questions, but what was the question that really concerns you more than anything else?
They were commanded to do it, so why is it wrong?
They were commanded to do it, so what's the problem? Well, why is it a problem? According to these, we show them. According to most, we show them, we're saying, if there's a mitzvah to do it, so what's the problem? And he reacts, Shmuel, Vayera Adavar. Why? Why Vayera Adavar, Vayera Shmuel, Kasha Amru, Tanel, Lon, Amel, Felisha, Tainu? What's wrong with having a leader? Now, you could argue, Kechol Agoyim. That would be.
But, you know, when they say Kechol Agoyim, you know, obviously it comes out as a pejorative term, but whoever said you can't learn something good from the Goyim? It's not that everything outside.
That is, you are 100% correct. The Gemara says, Chacham b'goyim, tell me.
Right, why can't we?
There's chacham among the goyim, and there's one to learn from them. There's no question about it.
Perhaps the Rambam says
they have a proper leadership.
One of the famous Rambams. Why was that?
Maybe they have proper leadership amongst the goyim, because clearly it seems like amongst Am Yisrael there was no one to really take over.
Right. Perhaps that's the greatest form of government at that point in time, and that's what the Jewish people needed. They saw that the goyim had it. It doesn't mean it's a pejorative term.
Okay. That is certainly a very authentic way of learning. So can I ask it to you?
But then why is Hashem against
us? Oh, that's exactly what I'm asking. Right. So why is that opposition?
Wasn't the whole Shofet system that Hashem personally appointed a leader, though?
In the case of the Shofet, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that you're 100% right. Because
so in a way, it was more of Hashem directly leading them.
Okay, good. You're 100% right. So let's just prove that. You look at the beginning of Shofet, you will see Keseder. It's really amazing. You have, especially the second paragraph of Shoftim. You have a Tanakh in front of you. In the second paragraph of Shoftim, which more or less is a pattern for the entire Sefer Shoftim, kind of dua, it's well known. You have the second paragraph of Shoftim in front of you?
Yeah.
There it says, after the Malach appeared, and we have all Moshe Shmuz over there. And then the Navi goes on to make the following statement, or makes a number of statements about Yeshua dying. And now, in Pasuk Yud, you have the paragraph based Pasuk Yud. The Gam Kol Adora Hu Nesu La Bosu Vayokam Dor Achir Achavei Mashal Yodos Hashem Gam Asama Shes Osu Yisrael Vayasu Nesu Sra Bini Hashem. The Mon Yeshua dies, by the way, we unfortunately go in the wrong direction. Vayadu Es Abodom, we become Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Vayadu Es Hashem Elokei Abosu Mamotzi Es Omer Tisai Vayot Vachor Yelim Achir Velo Yamin Mashal Sivaseyem Vayishtakvu Lehem Vayachisu Es Hashem Vayadu Es Hashem. Pretty bad. We abandon Hashem, Vayabdu Labav Vashtoros, Vayichav Hashem Yisrael. What does Hashem do? Right away, there's a clear, direct reaction. Vayitnei B'yad Shosin. What does Hashem do? He essentially put us in the hands of Shosin. How do you translate Shosin?
Spoilers.
That's right. But spoilers means people who are marauders and people who are going to literally make life.
Plunder.
What was that?
Plunder.
Exactly. Plunderers. Vayashosu Osa. Vayitnei B'yad Shosin. Hashem sold us to our enemies. Misavim. When we don't behave properly, the Tanakh says that what happens, Hashem gives us over to plunderers and the like. That's what Hashem told us. But then again, right after this, and that's what you pointed out, who saves us or who saves the day? Hashem. Who now appoints Shoftim to provide us with leadership and direction? Hashem. By Yoshir, the actual sayer. But what's the problem? The Gam Lo Shoftei, Lo Shomei. You think we listen to that? You know, Hashem appoints the leaders and what have you, we're not interested in them either. Kizom Achayim Lachayim, Vayishtachavu Lehem, Sorem Ahayim, and Adar HaShem, Ocha Apostol, Lashmur, Mitzvah Hashem, Lo Asu Kein. And it continues. I just want to read to the end of the paragraph. B'chihetim Hashem Lehem Shoftim, Voy Hashem Ima Shobei, so Hashem appoints the Shobei, provide him with Siyat HaDishmaya, Voshir Miyad HaBeyem, will save us from our enemies. Call him Ashope. He knocked Hashem in our custom and then Hashem and Hakem. Because what happens? The moment we subject the plunderers and marauders and spoilers, what do? We scream to Hashem, hey, help us. We are in trouble. So what does Hashem do? He responds. And then you test. Well, the Moshe Ashope. The Shope dies. Then what happens? Guess what happens? We go back to our merry way. Yeshuva v'shisim yavosem v'lachas achar yadam achayim lavda v'shach avosem v'lipil malayim d'achal akasha. And then again, v'yich av Hashem v'yisrael. It's like an absolute zigzag up and down. What did I call the seesaw? This up and down seesaw. That's what the Navi here describes. Ayom yana shabu agoy azer as brisi asher tivisi avosem v'lachom l'koli gam ani v'osem v'oshish v'neim v'agam v'shach avosem v'shuva v'yavos. And on and on and on, and so, and this more or less is the entire pattern of Sefer Shoftim. But again, does this now help us regarding the question of the two or three questions that the Abadanello here asked?
Well, no, it's another question on the Ramban, I would say, because here Hashem's appointing, giving us Hashem's appointing the leaders, and it seems that that's the way Hashem would want it, as opposed to us asking for it. Hashem just appoints those leaders. But the Rambam is giving the claim that no, he's saying he wants the Jewish people to come out and say we need these leaders.
Right, that's what the Rambam writes, that we are the ones who have to request as part of the mitzvah. But again, the question that the three or four questions here that the Abadanel asks, they are very strong questions. I don't think they're easily resolved from what I can see. And I just be kitzer. The Abavanel disagrees with all the above. The Abavanel seems to take the position similar to the position mentioned in the Gemara Rabbi Roy. He saw it in the Malchus of Gnai, and he does not assume that it's a mitzvah chiyuvis, does not assume it's a positive mitzvah, a positive command. Not only that, he says, not only is it a rishus, is it of an optional nature, but not an obligation, but he indicates that essentially the reason why that this Mesinash rishus was given by the Torah, because essentially the Torah recognized the frailty, the weakness of the national Yetzer Hara. That's exactly what he means. There's a national Yetzer Hara that we have, and we want to establish a country the way the non-Jewish world also has countries. And again, he is very clear that he is, shall we say, not a fan of the entire system. By the way, the Abadanel holds the ideal system is a republic. That's his position in general. I guess that's what he knew from Venice, and that's what he knew from a number of states in Italy. And he also indicates that he thinks the Shulton of the Shoftim, during the Zman HaShoftim, was far more successful, that model, than that which took place once Malachim came into being. That's what he writes. And again, one could perhaps, he doesn't see that someone who's a sole mani, a sole leader, that's the ideal kind of government. And according to him, to vest one person with all this power, he feels is absolutely unconscionable. It's unconscionable, it's not something which is a good idea, and he feels it to be a terrible pagam. And then, he goes on and on here at great length describing the downside of Malchus, and he goes through throughout history showing the downside of Malchus. And his position is not a very positive one. Okay, there were comments. Yeah.
On the converse side, why if the position of king is looked down upon according to the environment, why is the Lashon of Melech used by Hashem as, why is Hashem looked as the Melech, and we're always looking at him as like the king in itself? So wouldn't that imply that a Melech is somewhat a semblance of Hashem's leader, like a resemblance that we're trying to do of Hashem's leadership?
Yeah, but obviously it's not going to be comparable to the leadership
right,
of Hashem.
It's obviously not, but isn't that implying that it is an ideal type of leadership?
Why do you assume that?
Because it's used by, the Western leadership is used by Hashem also.
It's true. I'm not denying that. That Hashem, even with reference to Gideon, if you remember, even when Gideon was approached to become a leader, what was his reaction? Hashem, Umalkeinu, Hashem is the Melech, and I'm only a Melech Vasav Adam, only a mortal king. Hashem is the eternal king. I can see what you're saying. There's no question that a Melech, but even I think I mentioned to you a few times that Asalechim pointed out that a Melech, you see this in Piyutim, a Melech Vasav Adam is called the Melech Evyon. And what is Hashem called? Melech Elyon. So even though that is the model, the ideal model, but when push comes to shove and it's translated to reality here on terra firma, it's a Melech Evyon. I'm telling you, to me, I don't know how you, this is a subject we could also discuss at great length, and it's a subject, there's a lot of literature on this also, whether even the so-called model that the United States government has for democracy, is that something which is intended with our Hashkafa, with Judaism?
According to the Barbanel, it's probably much closer.
I agree. I say according to the Barbanel, I think that he is, if he had been indicted, he would be one of the biggest supporters of that system.
Checks and balances.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. His issue is that, as I told you, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And that's exactly his issue with Malthus. And I think that he, even though he doesn't say it outright, I mean, in his days, I can't imagine there are any democracies.
Officially the U.S. is a republic.
So, you mean in 1492?
Yes, in the 1490s. No. There were no democracies at that point. No. Democracy is a much later concept.
We don't have democracies. There's only one democracy. Democracy is when everyone votes on the issue. Republic is elected officials. We don't actually have a democracy. We select people to deal with issues.
What, in the United States?
Yeah. It's officially a republic. The only democracy was Athens.
So the Barbanel
says he supports a republic.
That's right.
The U.S. is a republic.
Yeah, but you're talking about literally, theoretically, America still is a democracy.
It's in actuality a republic. They elect the officials.
And what's a democracy?
When you vote on the issue.
Yeah, but you are voting on the issue. You're just voting for people.
Right, but that's the definition of a republic.
Theoretically, it is. But I understand you're saying literally. They tell you that in review now. In AP U.S. history, they tell you that it's not a republic. Because you're voting for people who vote for you.
Okay, but ultimately you're voting for the issues.
That's what I was saying.
That's how republic works. Also in Venice.
Okay, fine. You call that republic. But I'm only indicating, my reading of the Babadel seems to indicate he's the closest to this, supporting this kind of a system, which I don't think the Torah has any concept of. I don't think anywhere in the Torah or in Tanakh, and from what I know, is there any reference to a democracy or a democratic model.
That's obviously what the Barbanel is alluding to.
Who gets to choose the shofet?
That's the closest thing to what he had in his time.
But who gets to choose the shofet?
Technically, you can also say the midrash with the system of judges also.
You mean the whole system, the entire hierarchy?
It's not really.
But we see that only failed because that was as a result of us, not of the system. It could very possibly be that that was the most, system.
Okay, but I'm only indicating that the Abamanel is a dasyon. And I mentioned last week also the Svarno, the Svarno is younger than the Abamanel. Where is he born? He's born in the 1470s, something like that. So the Svarno, that he also went to university, I believe in Rome, if I'm not mistaken. He's an Italian scholar. He wasn't a politician. But he also had a connection with many, many political figures in Italy, and he also understood the political culture of his day. And he writes also in a very, very strong way against this whole council. I'll just read you again one line from him, a few lines actually. He says that the Alminu Shevet Levelech Bezeh Ofen, appointing king, that the Torah suggests, Asim Alay Melech, Nistavu B'Yasal Eretz, we were commanded to do when we entered Eretz Yisrael. As it says, V'loti Adas Hashem Katzona She'en Lehem Roach, we should be like a flock that has no shepherd. Omnam Shia Melech Kumalfi Agoyim, that the king should be like the kings among the non-Jewish subjects. Maxi B'Malfo Subazaro, that he should be the king, and then it should continue as a line all the way down to who knows what, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Nimas Eitzel HaKel Yisbarach. That's repugnant in the eyes of Hashem. That is part of Avot Tziva. So what did the Torah tell us? Shekasha Yakshu Arpan. If we're going to be obstinate. La'abi la'melach v'zeh ofen lo yikor alavim kosher. If we're going to be obstinate, at least pick someone who is worthy of occupying that position. V'lo yabri Yisrael al-adas. He shouldn't be a non-Jew, he should be a Jew. But they made a mistake. We made a mistake. We wanted the king the way other nations have. So then we were punished. And he quotes the Pesukim here in Shmuel, Aleph, the Pesukim that we just read, etc., etc. And Hashem says in Hosea, I'll give you a king in my wrath. He compares the Yemini Melech to Yifas Torah. Well, what, is the pastorah the ideal situation?
Not.
Certainly not. That's the understatement of the year. Another statement of the year. Pastor is absolutely, it's a tragedy which comes as a result of war and the tension of war and all that war brings to, shall we say, brings to bear in its wake. And the Torah tells us about the pastor. He writes his farno, what's going to be, Sofot Esnosa, Ben Sarah Amore, and he says a similar thing will come out as a result of the meeting. He's not to be fond of the system either.
The Torah says by the Yifas Torah, it says you need to do this. It clearly okay. Shows how it unravels.
Okay, that's no question that the Rishonim, that's how they interpret the Rabban understands, and the Gemara Kedusha is mashma like that. At the end, she has to go through a process of Geirus. She becomes a Jew, a Jewess. She has to undergo the process of Geirus and become a Geiret, etc., etc. So you are correct. The Torah is trying to, how shall we put it, redeem, if I could use the term, redeem. The Rav is very into this concept. The Rav, so the Rav is very into the notion, which he has many, many times. He speaks, for example, about beauty. And beauty is something that requires redemption. What does redemption mean? Beauty, in and of itself, can be something which can, Rahman al-Hassan, have tragic consequences. But if beauty is the subject of redemption to the Rav means somehow we have to channel it properly, and he talks about it in the context of marriage, and he talks about it in other contexts as well, and that's what he said. So that's what the Torah tries to do, the Pastor, to present it in a way where it will not, shall we say, be simply some fellow who is a lusty type and simply cannot control his animalistic, bestial kind of inclination, simply. I mean, it's almost like they have, this, how shall I describe, fellow who is out of control, and the first damsel that he sees, he simply, I don't know what I say, consumes her
heart.
So that's what you're 100% right, in terms of what you said, the Torah is trying to be metahir, the pastor, or give it some redemptive qualities, or if you will, a matter of fact, let's interpret it. He said, according to the Rambam, okay, I have to show you that in the pastor itself, the way the Rambam interprets the psukim, he said, the Rambam is teaching us how to, shall we say, humanize, and how to create a relationship, a real relationship of husband and wife, despite the fact that it originated from a pastor context, which is, as mentioned, not ideal. But the question is, how do I transform that into an ideal yachas of another lishta? That's how the Rambam interpreted the Rambam, his whole interpretation of the Pesukim and Pastor. That's what you're saying. Yeah, you're
obviously talking about what I'm trying to say is that even before the redemption aspect of it, it's the redemption aspect is more, at least the way I understood it, is that it's kind of like once it comes to that, then we'll have a redemption. But before that, it's like do this, that, and then hopefully you'll move away.
You'll come to that.
Yeah.
Eventually, you'll come to the ideal. Okay, the same.
Hopefully, you'll come to the ideal of doing away with her. And if you don't, then you can.
Is that more ideal than the redemption?
It's an interesting parallel between the cases.
No, the parallel, but he draws the parallel. The father, one who draws the parallel between the Yifas Torah and the Rishus, the Meaning Melech. But both of them are clearly not enamored of the concept. Both the Abanel and Sforno are obviously very much, I would say, even opposed.
They're opposites to each other.
Though. Yeah, I agree. There's a distinction between the two, between the Sforno and the Abanel. That also needs a good essay, so I have to write that.
How can something be a mitzvah and yet be frowned upon? How can something be a mitzvah and yet be a negative consequence? I have no reason.
Same way the Yifas Torah is, because it's at a certain point where she was saying was that he's so lustful that if he gets to a point, the Torah has a keen understanding of what.
Where else do we see that just because you really want something, the Torah is going to permit it?
Well, that's a point where it's a point
that's
of no return.
Rashi, according to the Torah, can make a mitzvah about.
Why do they make
a very, very striking Rashi. The Rashi is a pellet, an absolute pellet. I mean, this Rashi, Torah, shall we say, give in to the, how shall we describe it?
Yes.
To the Eitzah Hara, and to the lustiness, and how shall we, I don't know the terminology to use. That's a pellet. That's what he's saying, right?
But that, no, of course, at a certain point, though, it's like good educators, when, like, a lot of times in, like, schools, when they realize that kids
like are definitely going to do something. They know no matter what.
Look how many people fail in the riots.
Everything goes away. Especially
look how many people fall because of the issue of a riot. We don't permit a riot because
this is not
right. But this is a situation that you should be familiar with. The Gemara says a person who has a yetzahara to do an avera. We're talking about avera in the sexual arena. Says the Gemara the following: Yilbash Sharim Yisati. No, that's a different Gemara. But I'm talking about another Gemara. Yilbash Sharim Yisati Sharim. The Gemara says, let him put on black and let him dress in black. So let him go to a place that no one knows who he is. And after that, the Gemara doesn't say. So the Sharim took. What does that mean? Well, yeah, he should go and do the Avera. And actually, that means what's the whole idea of Yilbash Sharim, Yisav Sharim? We have to, how should we say, calm those horses down. We have to somehow try to put a break on the horses. But you were just saying a moment ago, you passed
away. What about the case of
Chas V'Sholom? We should do the Avera. Chas V'Sholom. So what's going on here?
About the Gemara in Sanhedrin, a point of no return where he's going to.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, what was that?
The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Dav Ayin Hey, where. The guy is like madly in love with this one.
Yeah.
They don't budge. They don't let him do anything.
Right. On the contrary, he to speak to him, Yachor Yachodem. He's a Hari Bal Yavar.
Right.
He's Vayim Bal Rais. Okay, these are very good questions. I mean, how do you reconcile all these conflicting desiderata? There are a lot of them. Okay, I'm not sure. I know, but I see two of the Rishonim, the Sron of the Ababanel, that they have clearly a very, very negative position towards Malchus and towards all this, but they are a minority. They are Dasyam. Rov Dolya Rishonim somehow were able to either see in the positive light the whole concept of Malchus and also reconcile their position with the Psuki, with all the difficulties. I'm asking that. Even the Rabban is difficult, the Achaim also has they work very hard to try to somehow kashu the Psuki. I'm not sure how to describe it, how to interpret the Psuki, so it fits into their old sheet. Okay, my whole point here was simply, partially, just to present to you some of the problematica that Rishonim had with the issue, and to show you the Machlokes Tanoim. Okay, I have actually one or two other things I want to talk about. I wanted to show you the Tziv. The Tziv has a very unique position. I was going to Xerox it, and I actually did Xerox it, but maybe I'll leave that to do it next time. It's very fascinating to examine how different, not just Rishonim, but also Achronim, dealt with the whole issue of Malchus. And then after that, I clear I'm learning Sefer Malachim. Don't think I can get the money to get to it. That's the whole idea. But I said Malachim, and all this is a way of a background introduction to the whole thing. Okay.
Is one of them right? Like, how does that work in your door? Is this an
Black
So it's not like one, it's not like